Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Randstad Q2 2010 analyst presentation and conference call. We're glad that you're here. For the people on the line, I've heard that we had a little problem as linking to the presentation, you were diverted to the press release. I hear that that has been fixed now, so I hope that you'll be able to find the sheets as soon as possible. I'm sorry for this inconvenience. We'll have the usual setup. Ben will take us through the performance of the various operating companies and strategy. Robert Jan will take us through the financials, and after that, we'll have a Q&A session. With that, I'll give the floor to Ben. Thanks.
Good morning. There you are, I guess. Is the mic on? Yeah, now it is. Second quarter 2010, a very interesting quarter, obviously. We look forward to the second quarter with lots of anticipation after having seen the growth during Q1. Of course, in March, we turned the positive again as we shared voluntarily and enthusiastically with you, obviously. Now the second quarter and what happened. You obviously saw the releases we sent out on the performance. Let's first go to the main markets, and then I'll get into detail again, as usual, on the main markets for us and what's happening there and how we were performing in those markets. Well, the trends are clear. The rainbow is staying a rainbow. They're all moving in the right direction, in the same direction, I should say, and also in the right direction. Whereas, of course, the acceleration in the, what is it, pinkish line of Germany is obvious. Because you should also see that on the scale, we make jumps of 10%, which in not many industries you can do. If you talk about a -30 and a +10 and a +20 and a +30, those are unusual numbers for most businesses, but unfortunately, on the minus part, we have to get used to that and are used to that. Big change in markets again. Trends are clear, trends are up. The one that's lagging behind is the Dutch market, obviously. All the others are doing very well, and we are steadily improving our performance in most markets. That's good. Staffing markets, of course, growth. As you've seen in in-house, we had over 50% growth, 50, which is to be expected because, as always, blue collar is picking up first. Also now we see, like in the U.S., that the professionals business is picking up, and in all markets that's improving, albeit not in growth mode yet, but anyhow improving because it means we are slowly absorbing the cost for overcapacity and turning moderate results into good results or even in some cases, losses into profits, which has happened in by far most markets by now. Accelerating growth, +14% organically, +13 per working day, +16 for the quarter. However way you look at it, healthy double-digit growth in all markets except for the Dutch market. I'll obviously get back to that a bit more. I could even imagine there would be some questions, but I'll give you so much information up front. It's gonna be a boring question session as usual again. In-house growing, of course. I see some people here nodding that that's impossible, but I'll surprise you, but you'll see. Professional segment shows slight growth, as I said. Perm fees are doing better. Actually, the lead times between the different segments, different markets, and also perm and staffing have shortened, as we already noticed in the downturn, but then everything happened very, very fast. For sure, also in the upturn, we see compared to former uplifts in the economy that the lead times have been reduced. Either the world is indeed a lot flatter than it used to be and/or this is a different cycle than we've seen before. Gross margin relatively flat. A big part of the sequential decline, 0.3% of it was due to Yacht in the Netherlands. If you take that out, then I'd say we have a fairly stable development in the margin, as we expected, by the way, and if I'm not mistaken, also as quite a number of you expected. Operating expenses up 6%. Biggest part of that is being explained by bonuses and commissions, so that's good news next to currency, which is neutral news because it doesn't matter much, as you know. The only currency risk we run is the translation of the profit since all costs are in local currency except for the board and the holding, and that's very, very cheap, so that doesn't have a big influence. That the currency effect on our results is not very big. Unfortunately, we'd like to have more profit in even more countries, but we're getting there. And then we also, in some markets, had to add some people, as you have seen in our overviews. I think the total increase on average was 55 people, mainly in Germany, because there we had really high growth, as you've seen. Whereas, obviously, an average of 40% indicates that there are areas where the growth is considerably higher than 40%. And that exceeds the overcapacity we had in those operations. So there we had to add some people and are still adding people. Compared to Q2 09, obviously the costs are flat. Robert Jan is going to get a lot more into detail on the cost development. EBITDA 120 million with an EBITDA margin of 3.5, which is nice and getting closer to our target of 4%. And I think a very interesting one, and also one we are anxious to share, so we put it in the key points and in my quote, and we put it here. We plan to propose to shareholders to pay dividend again if current trends continue. And so far, there's no reason to doubt that they will. Let's get to the markets. And let's start with the Netherlands. Again, late cyclical, as we have seen. What we also see in the market statistics is that blue collar is growing. We see the same. We see, by the way, also two patterns internally. That is that Tempo Team is at market and Randstad the Netherlands is below market. Give or take, I must say the market data were a bit confusing because the May number was a bit funny. Had to do with holidays that were partly holidays but were calculated as non-working days. That has big effect on the growth numbers, but still the trend is clear. We guess it's a -5, -2 about development we had. Randstad using some share in industrial market, Tempo Team app market. The biggest pain we obviously had in Yacht. If Yacht has an effect of 0.3% on the total gross margin, you also can calculate what it means for the Dutch gross margin. It has big impact. It also means, by the way, that both Tempo Team and Randstad are at the old-fashioned, if you want, but very solid profit levels they have been before and are still at. The pain, unfortunately, is in the Randstad Yacht area where we are now have taken the next steps to fix that. What we've done in Yacht is also not a secret. We've changed the structure. We've changed quite a lot of management. And the structure, I mean, the way the teams operate. Because what we shared with you earlier is we would investigate the best practice for professionals. That's finalized. We are implementing the best practice we defined, so the strong concept for professionals, in our professional businesses, especially in the UK. We've done a lot, also in quite a number of small countries, and also the reorganization within Yacht is in line with the best practices we discovered. Market is not recovering yet, and the combination of the fact that and professionals is late cyclical, and Yacht, for Yacht, the public sector, government, is quite a big client, has had an impact on the results as I just described. And again, that's the big explanation for what's happening, the biggest explanation for what's happening in the Netherlands. Gross margin sequentially down. Again, if you take out Yacht, then you have a different picture. And the EBITDA margin low, again, for the same reason. I guess these 2 minutes have at least eliminated 10 questions, but let's see what else you can come up with. France, closing the gap. We promised we would be in line with market. It would take us about a year. In June, we were in line with market, so that makes us optimistic about the remaining of the year. I must say the reorganization we had to go through went smoothly. Now at plus 18% in the quarter. 3.5% EBIT, which is EBITDA in my book, an excellent result, given the status of the development in France. Growth carried by all segments. Obviously, mainly manufacturing and automotive, which is, by the way, the case in all markets. If you look at all our big markets, the segments where we have growth, I'll show you in a minute, are obviously there. Permanent placement up 50%, which is an excellent sign. And the professional segment is also improving month on month. We're transferring clients and we're gaining new clients in-house. As we shared earlier, we have a lot of big industrial clients in the Randstad branches nowadays, which used to be Vedior. We promised we would transfer that business to in-house for a few reasons. It'll increase our market share. It'll make us provide a better service to the client. And it'll make us more profitable. And by the way, not necessarily because in-house is a lot lower level cost in France. but it'll increase the profit at the branches for sure, because they will generate other business, and exactly the business we should be at, more specialized, more clerical. And the market share gains by in-house will increase, will be the main driver to increase profit in for those clients for us. Gross margin sequentially flat. We close another few branches, which is one of the reasons we have some provisions still in the costs. And DSO improved 2.4% days. 2.4 days. That's a lot. Obviously, it still has to do with, of course, our excellent management. But next to that, I must say, the fact that legislation forbids companies to pay slower than 60 days also plays a role there. The sequence, if you look at the importance, might be the other way around, to be honest. But anyhow, it has a good effect on our cash. Germany, 40% growth on average through the quarter, as I just said, which is excellent. Strong outperformance of the market. The only part that's still lagging is the engineering. Gulp, our IT company, is really doing excellent, and actually has been doing very good through the cycle, through this downturn also, but through the whole cycle. Really excellent performance. Strong operational leverage with 5.4% EBITDA. And again, we are starting to invest in Germany because we need more people, both actually candidates, applicants, and internally. Unemployment in a number of areas of Germany is pretty low again. I heard that in Bavaria it's below 3%. Again, this is where we were before the downturn. Growth in the eastern part has been considerably above 50%. So we really see that that market is booming. UK, of course, we have in many countries a very mixed business. That makes it more difficult to compare market share gains or losses, because the market data usually are on staffing only. And especially in the UK, you see, of course, where we have this big mix between the two, it's difficult to compare to market. What we do see is that in-house has a very strong growth of over 30%. Staffing is more or less at the zero level. And then we see that there's some variance in the growth numbers in the professionals' businesses. If we look at everything that's related to government spend, like education and healthcare, we see a slowdown. Some other we see improving, especially finance, HR, media. And engineering construction is also doing better, but for sure not at the old levels yet. EBITDA margin up at 2%, and there should be more to come here. North America, obviously, starting point of all the trends for us anyhow, as we've shared often, plus 22%. Staffing has really done an excellent job. Actually, Linda is here. Profitability back, growth is back. I think we really found the right strategy to make it happen. Strong overperformance above market, doing very well. Professionals also now turning into double-digit growth, which was to be expected, of course, in the sequence. Especially IT, Sapphire, an excellent company that actually also through the crisis has performed well. Finance, where we had big problems last year, as we shared with you, obviously is fixed and returning profits again. Perm increased 20%. And Canada, we see actually lagging behind the US in a way that staffing shows very high growth, but professionals still is lagging growth there, which again is market and is coming. Gross margin sequentially improved, of course, carried by both better business in staffing, actually all three, by an increase in perm fees, and by the professionals market also recovering. And if it recovers, margins go up. And SUI charges, of course, the impact is always the biggest at the beginning of the year, because once you have paid a certain threshold, you don't pay anymore. That means your margin automatically goes up in time. In professionals, that of course takes a lot less time than when somebody would have a very low salary. Good cost management, I'd say. EBIT margin at 3.1%. So a big improvement compared to last year, and also a strong conversion. Looking at segments where we have growth or actually still a decline in our main markets, it's obvious that transport, automotive, and manufacturing in general are the carriers of growth. If you know that in-house is growing 50%, that's obvious. Food is lagging a bit in Holland, actually, through the cycle. Food hasn't suffered as much as the other industries, obviously. We still all ate, so that didn't change much. Business services, you can see the development. Financial services, there's a difference per market, but getting better. This is the picture. And obviously, at the bottom, health and social work, mainly France, picking up. U.S. doing very well, but it's more the bio science than hospitals and stuff like that. And in countries like the UK, etc., where it's more linked to government budgets, it's not doing so well. So this is a short overview of the main markets. Now I hand over to Robert Jan to take you through the financials and the outlook. And then I hope I'll be back with some answers to your questions. Thank you.
Well, good afternoon. The financials, after 7 quarters of decline in revenues, we finally have a quarter that shows growth again. Of course, that makes us very happy. We also have placed 70,000 people more at the end of the quarter than we did last year at the end of the same quarter. That's people we very often bring from unemployment into at least temporary employment and mostly moving on to permanent employment later on. So I think these are very motivating results. The positive trend through the quarter improved a lot. I mean, if we tell you in the press release that 15% is the growth for June and 11% for April, it means obviously that May is at 13%. But the variations are very big. The variations are at the high end of the scale, the German growth of 40% and the Netherlands being slightly negative still. If you zoom into that, you go to the professionals business in the Netherlands, double-digit negative in the second quarter. And that also drives the way we deal with the expenses, to which I will get back later on. Also positive trends, for example, in Greece. We still continue to put more people to work, even in Greece. The underlying gross margin has been sequentially flat since the third quarter of 2009. I'll get back with a specific slide on the gross margin development. The underlying operating expenses, Ben mentioned it, 6% up. If you take out the currency impact, it's 4% up, and it's mainly due to the commission's bonuses, but also investment. And I'd like to mention something on that one. Investments in expansion. On the one hand, it's obvious that if you have a 30% overcapacity in Germany and the growth rates are as they are, with a rate in the month of June of 46% growth, then it's obvious that one has to invest in capacity again. Not in expanding the number of branches, unless it's in-house. That is something we'll promote doing. But especially putting more people to work in the existing branches in which we have. We've got lots of desks with computers available to put new people to work. So the first, and for quite a while that will stay the same, priority is if we employ people to do that within the existing branches. But we also have a challenge here, because the markets where we do have low growth or no growth yet, the challenge is, do you want to take out further costs, the possibility to earn that back within 12 months, which has been the key criteria we've used over the last period. That's a more difficult one. So in quite some cases, we've decided not to cut too far anymore, to keep up the capacity, because we expect that with the global trends that we see, that we're going to use that capacity within the next 12 months. So the conversion as a result of that has been somewhat under pressure. EBITDA improved by almost 80%, up to 120 million. The effective tax rate, I'm not going to get back to this, it's 29%. It's very much in line with what we've shared with you in the previous quarter. No specific items to mention here. EPS up to diluted EPS to 45 cents for the second quarter. Moving average, DSO also improved by one day to 57 days now. And I think there's some confusion in the market about the free cash flow of Randstad. It amounted to 105 million negative, which we consider to be completely understandable, typical for the second quarter, because we do pay out a substantial amount of money on holiday allowances. Moreover, growth requires working capital, which we'd love to provide. And when you're at sort of the tipping point here, it's still the regular free cash flow is not enough to finance the receivables. So this is where you clearly see working capital going up. Whereas the free cash flow is not sufficient to finance that yet. When we get into sort of a continued growth mode, that's going to be a lot easier. So to us, this is exactly what one would expect for the second quarter. If you also go back to 207, 206, and so forth, you always see a high point in the net debt development and a negative free cash flow in the second quarter. Typically also a little higher because we pay out dividend. We used to pay out dividend in the second quarter. Net debt now came out at 1.142 billion versus the 1 billion. Leverage ratio now at 2.4. Interest rate has gone up slightly, 10 basis points to 1.35%. Still very happy with that policy going forward. And no mandatory reductions anywhere near. The capacity still stands at close to 2 billion euros. Well, this summarizes it into the income statement, and I'm sure you've looked at it closely. So I'll move on to the slide on gross margin development for the second quarter. From 20% last year to 18.7%, which is supported by the reclassification of the French business tax, which is an effect, as you can see, the green one over here, of 0.3% positive. But the key item, of course, is the temp margin, minus 1.3%. It includes the item that Ben has elaborated on, the 0.3% impact from the idle time effects and let's say the lower share in the total business of the yacht business. So there's a 1% sort of temp margin net of the 0.3, which is very much the result of the geographical and segmental mix shifts. I mean, the growth in the Netherlands being absent, whereas we have substantial growth, for example, in France, clearly puts some pressure on the overall gross margin. Perm fees up, they are now 9.2% of gross profit. They've been higher than that in the previous years, but at least we're recovering. We're coming from 8% in the second quarter last year. And I already mentioned the reclassification of the French business tax that has an effect of 0.3. We've also listed for you the gross margin development over the last couple of quarters in deteriorating markets over here and then into stabilization recovery started in the fourth quarter of 2009. This is what one typically sees also, a decline in gross margin. Actually, 200 basis points is less than we have seen in the previous cycle, so one could also say it's a little bit better. We also didn't start at a very high level as we did last time because the Netherlands was much higher at the time. So 200 basis points down. The blue one is the total gross margin. The brown one is, or orange one is the temp margin. And that's from Q4 09, where we did see the US showing growth again for the first time in the staffing business. We do see stabilization, which again is the typical pattern that one would expect. So in our book, this is something we did expect and we feel is the right thing to expect in this phase. And then typically it would move up again going forward. A few remarks on the productivity development in the group. This is expressed in employees working. So how many flex workers does each and every corporate employee of Randstad employ effectively? And the group is the purple line here, and it's still below what it used to be in 1998, as you can see. But look at the US, the blue line here. The U.S. is clearly ahead of 1998, and I have to say 1998 was not the benchmark, it's just the index here. At that time, I think we didn't have the right productivity levels, but as you can see, massive steps being taken, and that boosts productivity, and as such also the profitability in our staffing business in the U.S. It also shows that the remainder here, the other companies, Germany, the Netherlands, and the group as a whole, are still below where it should be. So we are eating into the overcapacity, but it's still out there. There's more of that. There's a lot of that in the Netherlands. There's very little of that in most regions in Germany. We also have expressed, and this is also how we measure it, how does our productivity look like if you measure gross profit per FTE? And also here, going back to 98, same curves again up, but this one always one has to take into account that inflation should be excluded from this slide. So an increase by itself is not good enough. It needs to be more than that. And if you look at the development of the group, We're still at 100 compared to over here, so we haven't even compensated for the inflation. So that again indicates that we should be able to get more profitability out of the same infrastructure. The consolidated balance sheet, I've included it here just to show you that there's not much special in it. It's no major movements, it's rather stable, and it repeats the numbers on debt as I have shared them with you. The consolidated cash flow statement then, and here you can see the movement in working capital as a result of what I described before, holiday allowances and also the investment in our receivables. If you look at the development in investments, CapEx investments, very much in line with what we saw last year. Nothing urgent, nothing outstanding that one has to make up for. So I expect the trend to continue. We're not going to open new offices with furniture. We don't have major IT projects being started as we speak. You can see the dividend payout here. That's the preferred dividend that was paid out in the second quarter, which we decided to pay. Then the debt facilities, the repayment schedule, it repeats what I said before, 2 billion facility, no refinancing before 2013, and very happy with what we have as an interest policy going forward. These are the priorities again. We've put in the slide just to emphasize, for us it's about market share, and as you can see the French business has closed the gap. We continue to have this as a key priority. The productivity measurement, the key thing here to watch for us is very much the conversion ratio. We look at converting 50% of the new gross profit into EBITA, and that's sort of the measurement we take as a base. And sometimes we allow our companies to invest more, because very often it's more attractive to invest in organic growth than to consider acquisition. So the name of the game in our business is organic growth, and this is the way we measure productivity. And as I said, sometimes we allow our companies to invest a little more going forward. 5 to 6% is clearly the target on the table. The outlook for next quarter going forward, positive trends that we have seen throughout the second quarter are continuing into July. We see no weakening of that across the board. We also expect to see growth in all segments, as Ben explained, so both at the industrial level, going up to clerical and into professionals. And as a result of that, we also expect, if these trends do continue, to see at the end of the year, a leverage ratio below 2, which should enable us to propose to pay dividend again to our shareholders. I'm also going to give you the exit rates of the quarter to support this. In the Netherlands, the exit rate in our book was -2. In France, it was 21. In Germany, 46%. In Belgium, 15%. The UK, close to 0. And then North America, which combines Canada and the US, at 26%. And that should also save us a couple of questions. So, Bart, we now move to Q&A.
Yep, we'd like to move to Q&A. Of course, we don't have to say it, that we would like to limit yourself to two questions so that many people can ask questions. We'll start with David.
Okay, thanks. David Jurabo. A question on the temp margin in the Netherlands. Could you provide us with the decline year on year in Q2 and also in comparison with that, the decline in Q1? And that's excluded for Yacht. To be precise.
I have to push a button or else you can't hear me. We don't share the gross margins, as you know. What we do see is that sequentially margins have not deteriorated from Q1 to Q2.
Does this also include the Netherlands? Because looking
the
at
Netherlands.
The EBITDA
talk
margin,
about the Netherlands here, yeah.
There's no decline sequentially. Okay. And maybe
there is no increase in the commercial pressure. Of course, still the mix is slightly down because there is more growth in industrial than in administrative.
Yeah.
But the commercial pressure is not more harsh than in Q1.
And the impact of renewal of contracts, will this also be visible in the coming quarters, do you expect, in the Netherlands? And maybe hamper some gross margin upside which you could expect probably from perm, for example?
I think the biggest impact by far is going to come from mix, and I would expect a very small impact, if at all, from contacts, because most big contacts have been renegotiated and have been in place for sure the biggest part of the second quarter.
Okay, and maybe a quick one on the UK, looking at the profitability. Is this, let's say, driven by the mix in activities, or do you believe that also, looking at the peer group, there's some more upside in specific segments?
Yeah, what is the difference between segments and...
I mean, looking at the performance per segment, let's say, do you feel satisfied with that, or you believe there's more upside compared to peers?
No, there must be. I can't compare to peers. I can only compare to our own numbers. And of course, given the fact that the professionals business, quite a large number of professional businesses are still way below where they used to be, that is a big upside to be gained from that activity, indeed, if they also generate more growth.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Teun?
Teun Deuze, ABN AMRO. First question is on your operating expenses, because it included bonus accruals. If we assume stable sales growth trend in the coming quarter, would there be no sequential impact from the bonus accruals then, or would there still be an impact?
I didn't say that for the full quarter we expect stable sales growth. I gave you sort of the outlook into July, and then we'll, you know, our forward visibility.
I mean, if we assume stable sales growth,
okay,
what would the impact of the bonus accruals be in your operating expenses?
Well, we'll see that going up because the sales level will again be higher, but it's very directly related to how much sales are going up. So if it's sort of stable, then the increase should be lesser than we see now.
Right.
And to add to that, maybe, we're a strong team today, of course. The mix is very, very important. So where do we sell how much? Obviously, an increase in permanent placement in Anglo-Saxon markets generates a lot more commission to be paid than growth in-house in Belgium, for example. So that plays a big role.
That's clear. And then another question. Is there any reason why the specialist or professional sales would not see a similar recovery trend as the other, the regular staffing sales?
I don't think so, no. I don't think there's a reason for that. You can have different developments per opco a little bit. For example, if an opco is heavily depending on government spend, obviously, there's going to be an effect. But for the total business, again, what we stated already in Q1, we saw a classical pattern of recovery, we said, and we got many questions about that, as usual. Then there's no reason why we should not see a similar growth in professionals business.
And Ben, the U.S. underlines your point, because that's where we already see growth both in the industrial segment, in the clerical segment, and also in the professional business.
Okay, thank you.
Arun Bogus Kempen. First question is on the Netherlands. I'm a bit puzzled about looking at the revenue trend Q2 versus Q1. Which is in Q2 higher, and still your EBIT is lower in Q2. Is that purely a mix impact, or can you elaborate on that? That's the first question. The second question is also on the Netherlands, unfortunately. So seemingly your flagship label, Randstad Blue, is underperforming. Can you share a target with us when you think you can catch up with the market, as you did in France, you know, where you sort of close the gap now? Is there a certain time frame where you think you can close the gap? Thanks.
The second one, what it usually takes to change in an unsatisfactory trend is between 2 and 3 quarters. So that's what we always aim at, to have things fixed. The other one was increase in sales, and then what was it?
Lower EBIT. So if you look at the Dutch sales...
Yeah, but again, for Holland, the impact of Yacht is by far the dominant one. If you look at the staffing companies, the trend you just described is not present.
So did you all deteriorate Q2 and versus Q1? Is that what happened, actually?
Yeah.
So you're taking extra steps over there to lower the idle time? Is that what we're seeing now?
We're making extra steps to make sure that it gets a lot more profitable in the future. Yeah, that's the right conclusion.
Okay. Were those two questions, or can I ask another one?
Well, he's the boss.
Well, question on Germany. I'm seeing you opening up more branches. Are these in-house branches which are added, or are these physical branches which are now being opened?
Yeah, across the board, what you will see is in-house growth. But we'll have some exceptions. I think in Germany we had 2 or 3 branches being reopened, more or less.
Okay.
But it will be, going forward, you will see very little expansion of the regular branch network.
Okay, thanks.
Hi, Conrad Zalman, Chevro. Two questions. First, on Yacht, I remember from like a long time ago that that business almost collapsed and you basically almost closed it down. And you said on the way up again, when you sort of put it back in the market, that you were not going to take as many people on your payroll as you did the first time. Can you give us a bit more insight into what's happening here? Because the impact on your overall results is actually quite big. And it would be good for us to have a bit more feel for what are you going to change, what the proportion of people is on your payroll, how much has idle time gone up by, just a little bit more flavor. And the second question is, the general view in the market about the macroeconomy is a little bit more uncertain now than it was a few months ago. And have you noticed anything from your clients or internally about the growth rates possibly tailing off a little bit in the short term? Thank you.
Your first question on your, please realize it's about a relatively limited amount for the group, just to begin with. But the underlying question is fair. When we went through the previous cycle, we took some learnings from that, and we created a structure where 60% of the people were on a permanent contract and 40% was flexible. That gets a lot under pressure when you get scarcity in the labor market. So we did it, but it wasn't easy in those years in 2006 and 2007. And as soon as you start adjusting the organization, it eats into the flexibility. We did test across the globe, by the way, the whole group against our stress scenario, which you are aware of. What we are experiencing now is 7 quarters of very substantial negative development. As I said, in the second quarter of this year, the professionals business in Netherlands is still double-digit negative. So it is worse than we anticipated in our testing. So going forward, we'll have to make sure we can deal with even more volatility than we anticipated before, and that will have an impact on the mix of our candidate pool in order to be able to adjust, for sure. And we have also, as Ben referred to, some other measurements where we're trying to make sure that we are more flexible internally than we have been before. And the general economy...
As we describe everywhere, again, we also, of course, see the same signs in all the media about the economy. As you know, we're no experts on macroeconomy, but we do see trends in 45 countries across the world. And it's difficult to imagine, indeed, that we would have major problems in the economy on the short term if you look at all those 45 markets and the way they are developing. There are a few things that could happen. We could speculate a lot about it, for sure, if something happens in the financial world, but that seems stable at the moment, but some of you guys are bigger experts on that than I am, I guess. So far, we don't get much... We don't get signals that actually it would slow down. Clients, the good news, of course, is that clients indeed also get nervous from all this attention in the media on possible future developments, because the more uncertainty there is combined with growth, the oftener they will phone us. So a little bit of uncertainty and growth is the ideal combination for our business, inevitably, because companies will even want to stay more flexible than they would do otherwise.
Mark Schwarzenberg, ING. First a question on Yacht also again. Maybe the impact you had there on your gross margin, because idle time, etc., it seems that there was some impact. And also going further on the Netherlands, you mentioned, Ben, fix the Netherlands in 2 to 3 quarters, but what needs fixing besides maybe Yacht?
That's not what I said. So we're losing market share in the industrial segment with Randstad the Netherlands. So that's something that needs to improve. That's what I'm referring to.
And how do you see that being fixed?
Well, the same as always, huh?
Price.
You put the right resources, you direct them in the right market, you give them the right tools and methods, and then they'll be successful.
Okay. I thought that was already in place, so then it leaves us only to the price.
No, again, on the industrial segment, Randstad Netherlands, because that's the main driver of us below, Randstad Netherlands being below market. is something that, of course, is difficult to accept. So we'll have to correct that.
Yeah, fair enough. And then on SG&A, up 4% organically in the quarter. Obviously, with the growth accelerating through the quarter, there must have been also a step up through the quarter. What can we take as sort of organic run rate going into the third quarter and with the uncertainty in terms of economic outlook, what is the management discussion on further investments in that area?
Well, Mark, it also goes back to where the growth will be. Eh? If we're going to have growth in the Netherlands, it's going to be processed by people we have, by branches we have, a back office that we have, whereas in Germany we'll expand. So it's very much a function of that. But we do expect to see very solid conversion ratios going forward.
Fair enough, but is the sort of run rate you can guide us at, or the exit rate for the SG&A organically in June?
Well, I think I'll have to stick to what I just said.
Okay.
But again, it's unit steering, as you know, so it's driven by productivity levels in the actual operations at the lowest possible unit in our company. That's what decides whether or not we will invest in markets. It's irrespective of any forecast, publication of any agency, whatever. It's our own numbers, as you know, that rule our decision whether or not to invest. Okay. That's why it's easy. Yeah? The only risk is if we take a decision. Yeah.
We'll take one more question here from the room, and then we'll switch to the line, and then we'll get back.
Hi, Marco Joris, KBC Securities. You mentioned that in the outlook that growth rates are holding up well. You seen growth rates stabilizing in some countries in the third quarter, and do you expect to see that? And also a question on scarcity. Have you seen already some scarcity showing up in some countries, and if yes, where?
Yeah, the growth rates, as we shared with you, the trends of June have continued in July. That's as far as we have seen so far, eh? Because we're not in August yet. Scarcity, indeed, of course, as I said earlier, if you look at Bavaria, where unemployment is at 3%, that it's already difficult to find people, and there are more areas, but it's more regions or parts of a country of market where we see this happening. Yeah.
I mean, so the growth rates, do they still accelerate or do they stabilize because of easier comparables?
What do you expect? The comparables are not easier yet in July. Eh? So because as you remember last year, Q2 and Q3 were our worst quarter with a minus 30 and a minus 28. Mm. So the comparables in Q3 don't get easier yet.
Okay.
But as I said, they continue. And a week on week input on what's happening with our employees working, that's not reliable enough to share with you, and it would be too detailed.
Okay.
Yeah. I have nog één vraag hier.
Well, I mean, operator, maybe let's start with the questions on the line right now.
We have four questions over the telephone at the moment. Our first question today comes from Jamie Brandwood of UBS. Please go ahead.
Morning. I wondered if I could start by asking about idle time more broadly at the group. I guess it's mainly Germany and the Netherlands, but is it true that as you move into Q3, you will have more working days in Q3 than Q2, and therefore that everything else being equal, you should have less idle time? There should be some benefit from that?
In the third quarter, we'll have, on average, four more working days than in the second quarter, but
yeah,
it equals the number of working days we had in the third quarter of last year. So you're right, if we pay monthly salaries, which we, for example, do in our German business, in most of our professional business, then we'll benefit from that, and that should help the profitability in the third quarter. Yeah, and there's one more point. Eh? We have normally July, August are strong months for us, but typically not in the professional segment because people will go on holidays.
Right, of course.
And what we do for that is we do provide the cost of sales. So that means we're going to miss out on the gross margin.
But you'd still expect, for example, in the case of Yacht, therefore, which is so professional-focused, that the idle time would still increase in Q3 versus Q2?
No, because we're going to use the holiday planning to deal with the idle time. We're going to use the measurements we just shared with you. So that is not the underlying expectation.
So do you think actually you can reduce idle time in Yacht already in Q3 versus Q2?
Well, that for sure is the ambition.
OK. perfect. And then
maybe to add to that, as Robert-Jan just explained, the idle time will be less, but you will still miss the gross margin on the days that the professionals are not working.
Yeah, exactly. No, fair enough. And then you kindly gave us the exit rate for perm in France, which was a pretty unbelievable 50% year on year. Can you give us some perm exit rates in some of the other countries? I know it's 21% for the group, but can you give us UK, North America, maybe a couple of others that are interesting?
Yeah, I think we shouldn't get into all that much of detail, but it's obvious that it's improving. It's improving in every market. And the rate at which it's improving is still varying. And again, we gave the average and we gave an example of a very big market. Unfortunately, I think we have to stick to that, Jim.
That's fair enough. Just on the UK then, because obviously that's the one country where the exit rate looks a bit weaker than what you... This is for the whole of the UK, including temp, where the exit rate looks a little bit weaker than what you saw for the whole quarter. Is this mainly because you're now starting to feel more pain on the public sector side?
Yeah, exactly that. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Our next question today comes from Tony Skies of Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Tom Sykes from Deutsche Bank. Just wondered if you could make some comments on the structural growth. I mean, obviously your peers have commented on structural growth trends. Devil's advocate would say you're more exposed to industrial production than GDP is, therefore as industrial production has done very well, the GDP multipliers have been higher. How would you kind of counter that? What are you seeing from your clients from a structural usage of temps? And maybe what are you seeing in kind of the clerical professional markets from the point of view of using temps as well, please?
Yeah, I'm a bit puzzled by this, what you're saying, that we are more exposed to the industrial market than most of our competitors. I don't think that's the case. Depends who you compare us to, of course.
No, it's just that your exposure to industrial production is perhaps higher than GDP's exposure to industrial production.
Ah, okay.
So therefore,
yeah,
if IP is doing well, your GDP multiplier for staffing should be higher.
Yeah, that story hasn't changed, actually. So we see the same thing happening as we have seen after every downturn. Everybody gets nervous, and they claim they will use a lot more flex than they did before. However, everybody has a bad memory, and after maybe 2 years, we have a collective amnesia, and companies hand out permanent contracts again. On the other hand, the structural growth of our business, of course, still continues, because we do see, for example, the opening up of a number of sectors. France opened up public sector. The proposal now in Spain would also include opening up public sector and construction. So you see that the structural developments of our business look favorable. Expectation is that penetration in the U.S. could exceed former levels of penetration again. So that all looks healthy. Of course, based on the fact that, indeed, if a company wants to be efficient, workforce planning, having the right quantity and quality of people available is extremely important, and is very sensitive, and is something that requires a lot of specialist knowledge. That's why it's being outsourced to us. So I'm very optimistic about the structural growth of our business, but again, not based on the fact that we just had a severe downturn, because everybody will forget again, but in 2 years.
Okay. And in terms of the sort of short-term visibility that you have, and in particular sort of the experience you'd expect with regards to factory shutdowns, and perhaps relative to what happened last year, do you think there's probably a bit of a benefit for you that, as you say, you've got the same seasonal trends? What's the outlook for kind of factory shutdowns in the third quarter?
Yeah, we have no. If you look at the growth levels, it differs obviously per market. So if you look at, for example, automotive picking up strongly, I would be surprised if you would see a lot of close downs in that sector. But it's too much to ask to give me a detailed analysis or even a total for all the factories we are supplying people with.
Okay, no problem. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question today comes from Mark Debor of RBS. Please go ahead.
Yes, gentlemen, it's two questions for me. Coming back on the performance in the Netherlands, it doesn't seem that your main peer in the Netherlands is gaining share, and now you're referring to the underperformance of Randstad NL. I mean, what's happening in that market? Can you maybe put a bit more kind of color to the numbers? I mean, what, in your view, is the market growth rate then in the second quarter, and where is Randstad NL? And finally, on yacht, I assume that in the comparison of Q2 performance versus Q1 performance, there is a big impact of the working days. However, would you also say that your performance has weakened for yacht in Q2 when you would adjust for those working days, or is that the main impact there?
Ja, wat was nou de eerste? Was dat het niet over die markt?
Ja, de goede. Maar die, zal ik
komen? Ja, dat is goed.
Mark, the growth in the Netherlands, you're referring to the ABU data. There are some specific players in the Netherlands that are fully focused on the industrial segment. And of course, that has an impact on their trend. So they clearly outperform us, having a much more mixed book. And that is at least the analysis that we have been looking at. And with regards to the yacht performance in the second quarter relative to the first quarter, you're right. The second quarter was a weaker quarter.
But then coming back on the first one, Robert-Jan, are you comparing then the Randstad NL performance versus the ABU data or versus your own benchmarks?
No, we're looking at the ABU data, whereas the comment. Sorry, it's Ben again. We were a bit surprised by the May number, which suddenly, of course, turned to plus 5. And as I mentioned earlier, the effect of working days, taken into account, that was too big, because we had a number of days that did not count as working days, although we saw that quite a number of people were actually active. So that means the growth per working day was overstated. So that's why we think it should have been more in like a minus 5, minus 2, minus 2 like development than what the ABU data showed actually at a plus 5 in May. That seemed to us a bit overdone.
Yeah. And Mark, right, and to get it entirely clear, you are underperforming versus that minus 5, minus 2, minus 2. That is basically what your Randstad NL brand is doing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mark, I have one addition to make to my yacht remarks, and that is in the second quarter, some of the book of yacht is dependent on the public sector. And the public sector in the Netherlands has also reduced its spending in the second quarter. So that in itself was also a reason.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question today comes from Pieter Loon of ING. Please go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon. Pieter Loon speaking at ING. I got a question with regards to the dividend. You state that you want to start paying a dividend again if the current trends continue in line with the stated policy. Can you remind us what that means? I mean, does that mean that if we are if you're going to pay at the end of the year, are we going then to 60% or 30%, or is the 125, which was the last dividend, the reference point for paying dividends?
The policy is unchanged, will be unchanged, and that means that we will aim at €1.25 as long as it is between the brackets of 30% and 60% of the net profit adjusted in the regular way for the amortization.
Okay, very clear. Thank you very much.
Our next question over the telephone comes from Toby Reeks from Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. A couple of questions from me. The first is just sort of going back to your December scenario analysis. If you look at the sort of, I think, the three scenarios you laid out for 2010, it looks like we are firmly in the sort of far right-hand side, i.e. consensus revenues already at 13.5 billion and gross margin, it looks as though it's trending to be around about that 18.6. Can you confirm that 4% EBIT margins looks like an achievable target for 2010 now?
Yeah, again, the scenario, of course, is based on an assumed mix that differs a bit. We're not going to give a forecast for the year. Unfortunately, we can't do that. But you should take into account the different mix underlying the different ways to get to a 10% growth.
Okay. And then the second one, just on the French market relative to what Manpower is saying, that the competition has been aggressive on pricing and they are actually struggling to recapture some of their gross margin. Is that something you're feeling as well, or do you think that's a Manpower-specific problem?
I don't know how big the mirror is that Manpower has, but I think it is a Manpower specific problem.
And to your knowledge, both you and Adecco are being disciplined on pricing in that market?
I think the former answer covered it all.
Okay, sure. Thank you very much.
Our next question today comes from David Hancock from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. A couple of questions on typical patterns that you mentioned, Robert Jan. Firstly, around working capital, you said that was the kind of pattern you would expect in Q2. Can you just talk about for Q3 and Q4 the normal seasonal pattern you'd expect, but with the growth rates that you're seeing, would you expect to get inflows in Q3 and Q4? And the second question was around slide 19 on the gross margin development. So the stabilization you've seen over the last few quarters, you said you'd hope to start regaining that lost gross margin. On a typical cycle, how long would you expect to take to recover that gross margin that you lost? And do you think you can get back to the previous level of temp gross margin, so excluding the sort of mix effect on fees, but on temp gross margin, do you think you will eventually get back to where you came from? Thank you.
Yeah, David, you're correct. We do expect, if the current trends do continue into Q3 and Q4, to see a positive free cash flow coming out of that.
Positive free cash flow and a positive working capital inflow.
No, what we will see is that this should translate, let me be very clear, into a lower net debt position at the end of the year.
Yeah.
So it's a balance between EBITDA and working capital, right? So that's shifting. On the gross margin development, what we've seen after every cycle is that, again, with the delay and the difference per segment, etc., and as I've mentioned earlier, the lead times in between the different developments, the developments between different segments and countries have changed. We have been able to recover usually a bigger part of the margin. If you look back, by the way, not 100%. Although in the last downturn, of course, the Dutch market started at an extremely high margin of over 28%, which was a bit too much because we found out that price elasticity does exist. So again, in a normal development, you would expect us to be able to recover part of the biggest part of the lost margin. And next to that, of course, a mix of business changes. So the bigger impact of the professionals market later in the cycle should have a positive effect on our profitability. And last but not least, we reconfirmed earlier that we want to be in the 5-6% EBITDA bracket. So that's something we're aiming at.
Okay, thank you.
Our last question today comes from Matthew Lloyd of HSBC. Please go ahead.
You know, I was going to say good morning, but good afternoon, gentlemen. Just a question. You mentioned earlier that time to hire was very, very short. I wondered what would happen to your growth rate and to your capacity utilization if that normalized. So if time to hire was very short at the moment but got slightly longer, still in a sort of recovery pattern, I wondered whether you'd had any thoughts about that. And then my second question was slightly more facetious, and that is, have you ever asked a branch manager when his business is growing slower than the market, whether it's his fault or someone's discounting, and he's actually said, no, it's my fault?
Yeah, I'll take the second one, because that's never a reason not to grow, obviously, because that would only be valid would you have 100% market share. Unfortunately, that exists nowhere. Yes, indeed. People always claim the fact that competitors have lower prices, but that's never a relevant excuse. If you execute our concepts right, you will gain market share. It's as simple as that. And if the market forces us to provide the service at too low a margin, we will either not do it, or we will have to have concepts that enable us to make the required profit levels on those activities.
And your first question is about scarcity. I'd first like to point out that we are operating in markets like France with 10% almost unemployment, in Spain with 20% unemployment, the US 9, and so forth. So I really think this is a question that might relate to very specific regions or circumstances. It's something we rarely see across the board. We have some exceptions, and Ben referred to to those. And you should also know that if our clients are asking for people we think are hard to find, we'll help those clients to understand that there are different profiles a lot easier to find. I mean, that is our profession. So theoretically, you're right. If the time to hire is increasing, that might have an impact on our growth rates. At the same time, we have the capabilities to help our clients understand what kind of profile to go for and not go for the as we say in Dutch, the sheep with five legs, because everybody wants it.
Thank you very much indeed.
Yeah. Okay. Ben is adding a low unemployment also leads to high mobility in the labor market.
Thank you.
So there are no more questions on the line, so we shift back to the room, because there was at least one person still having questions.
Chuck Ackerman, Rabobank. To what extent do you see your clients making their own people more flexible instead or besides asking for temps?
I don't see that as a strong trend today.
All right.
They've always done that to a certain extent, but the levels of flexibility you need in many sort of operations are so big that that's basically impossible. I'd rather see the opposite, and again, it's because it's so complex. Companies want to outsource the hassle of recruiting, finding the right people, defining the ideal pool, doing the planning, etc. So it's rather the other way around than that they actually find a solution inside.
Right. What a question. Now the integration with Fior is behind us. When can we expect some new acquisitions?
Yeah, as you know, we always share the lists with all investors on the targets we have and also the timing. So we'll stick to that list, and that's the answer to that. Yeah.
All right. But for example, when we look at professional services in the Netherlands, you first want to clean the house, so to say, before you look maybe to add on some other
What we shared on a more serious note is that we shared earlier in that we do not want to expand the number of countries we're active in. We'd rather be big in the countries we are in than add countries. Second thing, because again, density generates more profit, market share. Two, what we said is the main focus is organic growth. First in staffing because we have to do it, and two, in the professionals business because we now defined the best way to work, strong concepts, so that should help us to accelerate that business even faster. The third thing we said is if we invest, we will do that in companies that would actually increase our density in markets where it's still too small, because that would increase our profitability. And specifically in the professionals market, once we have proven that our concept works and we're getting more and more assurance that indeed is a fact, that would then be an area where we would be looking at an acquisition. But when and how, etc., it's too early to share that.
One small question about Yacht, because for me it's not really clear now. What is the trend through the quarter within Yacht?
That's not improving yet.
It's stable.
Frank van Eyck, SNS Securities. On Yacht again, sorry, but your ambition is to reduce idle time. Is that an absolute and a relative number?
There's a link between the two, as you so the answer must be yes.
The relative number is more difficult to achieve if your sales going down also. So.
No, but the answer is yes. Obviously. Again, so both, yeah.
On Germany, professional engineering, what do you see over there? And are you a little bit disappointed in development because, industry is picking up so fast over there? Can you elaborate more on that? And on, in general, the CLA, one CLA in Germany, what do you expect from that to win more market share?
Yeah, the second is easier because we had a few competing collective labor agreements, like the Christian ones, that allowed those companies to work with lower salaries. And that, of course, is easy to compete. They now had to go to our level of salaries. Hence, we have seen this growth in Eastern Germany because that's the main area where that has an effect of over 50%, considerably over 50%. So we're actually taking a lot of share from the companies that in the past could win by paying low salaries. And the other question, what was it? Engineering in Germany, yeah. Engineering is a specialty, but also a black box, obviously. There are many different sorts of engineering. The engineering where we struggle most is, as we shared before, is in the airplane production, if you want. So that's the that's where we suffer. That's still a difficult market and a complicated client. So that hasn't changed yet. If we do not perform according to our ideal picture, I am always disappointed. But that's not a question because that's my job.
Over the final question, sir.
Twente Use ABN AMRO. One follow-up on dividend, because Robert Jan was quoted this morning on a newswire that it looks good to be able to pay 1.25 dividend. Can we read that as an implicit guidance for at least €2.10 EPS for this year?
Wrong statement, wrong quote.
Okay, thank you.
So we'll end it here. Thanks for being here. On the table you'll find a booklet, which is called Bridging the Gap. 2 years ago we wrote a study about the trends in the labor market, Mind the Gap. Now we have issued a booklet on how we can help to solve that gap. It will be an interesting read, and I hope you enjoy your summer holidays with that. Thanks.